TEN Files, the ultimate Titans podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
With us now is Terry McCormick of TitansInsider.com and 102.5 The Game in Nashville. You can follow him on Twitter at TerryMC13. How you doing today, Terry?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Now, this was a disappointing loss to the Raiders. It seemed as if Tennessee had an opportunity, especially in a division that is still definitely up for grabs, to maybe flip the script, beat a Raiders team that had an atrocious first couple games on the defensive side of the ball. Didn't all come together, even though they had a terrific rushing performance. What happened in this game?
Well, the Titans just made too many mistakes. They weren't able to score enough points, and I put this on the offense because, you know, this is a team that really, the way they play the game with smash mouth, running the football, and, you know, a short to intermediate passing routes and things like that, they have a very small margin of error. Their goal is to move the chains, keep it close, pull it out late. And when you turn the ball over three times like Marcus Mariota did yesterday, you're cutting into the number of opportunities you have to get points. And they were only able to get 10 points yesterday. And in fact, a late drive that would have tied the game was negated because of two penalties there on that final drive after they got inside the 5-yard line.
Well, that was the problem. Mariota having a pretty shoddy day in general, just barely over 50% completion, had the two picks, no touchdowns, and even wasn't able to run around too much with purpose. A lot of it was, you know, running for your life a bit. Now, Oakland had a pretty bad couple games on defense, but we know they have a tremendous amount of talent. How were they able to take advantage of some of the offensive line during the passing games? Because on the rushing games, they were great. The Titans put up 6.2 a carry, almost 190 yards rushing.
Right. DeMarco Murray gave them the first running back the Titans have had to go over 100 yards since Chris Johnson at the end of the 2013 season. Now, for those of you keeping score, that was two head coaches ago when Mike Munchak was in charge. but back to Mariota and the offense, I think the Raiders pretty much knew that the Titans were not going to make big plays on them down the field very often. So they were comfortable in creeping the safeties up and having the corners play pretty tight coverage and not give up big plays over the top. And I think that strategy worked. You know, not only does that help you bolster the run, even though the Raiders didn't do a real good job of that yesterday, but they knew that that the Titans receivers were not a real deep threat to them. In fact, the best receiving day the Titans had was by Jason Morrow, who was just claimed off waivers 3 weeks ago from the Jets. He had three catches for 59 yards, filling in for Delanie Walker, who missed the game with a hamstring injury.
Is Walker supposed to be back anytime soon? Obviously, you know he's a part of what they want to do there if they can get him back quickly.
Yeah, he should be back this week. It was very close, kind of touch and go, but they decided to err on the side of caution. They held him out this week. I would think that he would be back when they take on the Texans next Sunday in a critical AFC South matchup.
As you pointed out, Amaro did lead the team in receiving yards. Does he have a role going forward?
Well, you would like to think so. I mean, because I think in lieu of the fact that this team is a little bit challenged in terms of playmakers on the outside, especially, you know, Kendall Wright being out of the mix right now with a hamstring injury, they're hoping to get him back relatively soon. But I would think that they might want to start employing a package where they have both the receiving tight end, Jason Morrow and Delanie Walker, on the field together, run those guys down the seam, see if you can get a matchup on a linebacker or a safety, and take your shots there. Because I think using a two tight end set with two receiving tight ends, sort of like the Patriots did a few years ago when Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez were far better targets than most of the wide receivers they had. I think that's where the Titans maybe can find some success if they'll use those two tight ends together on occasion.
Well, they had 10 plays yesterday where they ran with three tight ends, and they even had three running backs at one particular alignment. How do you think this kind of smash-mouth offense can help them against a team coming up next like the Texans, which has a pretty impressive pass rush?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to try and establish the run and get into second and short, third and short. They can keep the downs and distances manageable, avoid the penalties that can put them in some long yardage situations as well. I think then they're going to have a chance to compete and neutralize some of that Texas pass rush. Obviously, they've got to account for J.J. Watt and what he can do on the defensive side. There are other guys there. Jadeveon Clowney is playing pretty well right now. So, you know, and that Houston front seven is pretty good. They're going to have to find a way to run the football and run it successfully, which is what they want to do anyway, in order to open up anything at all and keep the pass rush off of Mariota and keep him clean.
Going forward, this kind of smash mouth offense seems like a great plan because it does tighten up the game. It keeps it close. It keeps your tempo and eats the clock, but it puts a lot of leverage on the defense if you don't score. And their 42 points on the season is tied for the worst in the AFC. How do they manage to get more points on the board?
Well, that's a good question. I think that's something that they're trying to figure out around here. I think one of the things that you can do, and I think you have to have the defense and the special team step up when you know you're challenged in scoring with the ball on offense. You need a big play, an interception, a fumble recovery on defense, a long punt return or kickoff return on offense to give yourself a short field. A lot of the Titans' problems this year has been because they've been going the long field on a lot of possessions. There have been a lot of possessions they've started from the 20 or even further back. Against Detroit in a game that they've actually won, they started five times inside their own 10, believe it or not. So they were having to put together long drives just to even have a chance to score. And that, in essence, is a big part of the problem because they don't have enough firepower, enough explosiveness offensively. They're having to play it close to the vest. So sometimes you have to get those explosive plays out of other aspects of the game, either on defense or special teams.
That's exactly where I wanted to go. What I wondered is, look, I'm a running game guy. I like teams that control the tempo, control the pace, and wear you down. But from time to time, we all hear it's a quarterback league. We see these gaudy numbers put up by quarterbacks all the time. Do you think this style of offense can work in 2016 NFL with any consistency?
Well, I'm a little bit skeptical. I mean, it can work, but there's such a smaller margin for error that I think you have to make sure that you have the personnel that can run it efficiently, and run it consistently. And I think when you have penalties, when you have turnovers, you know, you're already lessening the number of chances by playing that style of football that you may get. Because if you're throwing the ball a lot more and you're getting more possessions, you're not running as much time off the clock because they're, you know, it stops every time there's an incomplete pass and things like that, you're probably shortening the game one or two possessions a game anyway. So when you turn it over or you have penalties and it forces you to go three and out or drive stall after you've gone, you know, 30 yards and you're just on the cusp of field goal range, it fizzles out. You know, those are the type of things that are liabilities for the Titans right now in this offense. They're going to have to get those types of things cleaned up until they can figure out a way to become more explosive.
Well, it's a big month coming up for the Titans. They get the rest of the team in their division over the course of the month. You get the Texans that we've talked about, then Dolphins, Browns, hopefully one or two of those you'd think would be winnable, if not both, but then the Colts and the Jaguars. So when we look at this team on November 1st, where do you think they'll be and where do you think they'd have to be?
Well, that's a good question. I think, you know, you got to come out when you get to the halfway point of the season at, you know, after eight games, you got to find some way to be 4-4, because I think 4-4, the AFC South is not a very good division. I mean, let's be honest here. You know, every team in the AFC South has holes in it. And last year, the Titans were a terrible 2-7 at one point, and they were like a game and a half out of first place. Now, it may have improved some this year for all the teams, and, you know, an 8-8 record or a 9-7 record, you know, may not win the division this year. But certainly, if you are 4-4 at the halfway point of the season, then you would certainly think that you're in the thick of the AFC South race, because by getting to that, you're probably knocking off some of the other teams inside the division and setting yourself up to have a strong divisional record for that second half finish.
He is Terry McCormick. The website is TitansInsider.com. You can also check him out at 1025 The Game in Nashville. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at TerryMC13. Thanks a bunch, Terry. Well, hopefully we'll check in a few weeks. We'll see exactly how they turn out maybe when November rolls around. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we will be back on the other side with the coach, Ryan Billick. Stay tuned.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. Almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate, the low expectation coming into this next game. And this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have 8 starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's pretty lofty bar. You know, to win 2 games. And so, oh my gosh, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of a less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportions. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was a great, great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, that we or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that aren't good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after two, you know, after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now, Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentz's and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touches a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially as the season rolls on in a cold-weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win six or seven games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is he's taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in, so I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.